try this as an experiment. Look deep into yourself for the sense of I and for the I thought. Do you find an I? Do you find the I thought? No, there's no I thought there, is there? There's no I, is there? Anybody find an I? Raise your hand if you found an I. If you didn't find an I, raise your hand. Well, that was the method called direct pointing. You look inside yourself and the teacher tells you there's no I there, is it? You are now officially enlightened. You have seen through the illusion of the I. According to the Facebook, people are waking up by the thousands using this direct pointing method. The teacher looks, tells you, look inside yourself and you don't find an I, do you? Well, you've seen through the illusion of the I. You are now awakened. $25, please. PayPal, preferred. You'll get your certificate in the mail. And I will give you a Facebook address where you can start your own blog, too. Then we'll be in competition. That's the method of direct pointing. Wonderful, isn't it? Really, that's what's going on Facebook. You know, I can't guarantee anything. But if you listen to chanting, this kind of chanting, a few hours every day, read the Nisargadatta Gita, ponder what it means, try to locate the I sense, read the Nisargadatta Gita a little more, listen to more chanting, listen to these satsangs. There's nothing that's going to stop you from being awake in some period of time. That's all you have to do. Just hang around me. Come to satsang. Listen to this chanting. That's all you have to do. Every now and then you can listen to Robert's bullshit or Nisargadatta's bullshit too. But my bullshit is as good as any other bullshit. Because the concepts are not important. If anything, you want to get rid of all concepts. Robert used to give you so many different concepts that after a while you said, oh my God, all these fucking concepts, and you dropped them. First principle should be, whatever you think is true is wrong. Second principle, even this is wrong. Third principle, shut up. Fourth, become dumb as a rock. Now, some of you are pretty close out there to being dumb as a rock. But others are altogether too smart. Altogether too smart. Sacred music is so important. It'll just take you away. It'll fill you with bliss and ecstasy. Your mind will stop. You go for hours without knowing where the hell you are, what you are. Your marriage will fall apart. You'll lose your job. You didn't want it anyway. Your house will be foreclosed on. Your car repossessed. And you'll be blissfully happy. You'll join the ranks of Alfred E. Newman on Mad Magazine saying, "What, me worry?" Just chant. Look into yourself. Look for the I Am. Listen to these satsangs. Read the Nisargadatta Gita. Maybe a little bit of Prior to Consciousness. Hi, Lakshmi. Hi. How you doing? She hasn't been well lately. Recently, I put a new post on the blog and on Facebook, and it's getting very positive responses. I wish I could remember what I said. Does anybody have it there? I'm going to read it. Let me see. What did I say? Oh, yes. You know, I first started out in searching for enlightenment, I think it was 1967 or 1968. I had read that Buddha started when he was 26, and I wanted to do the same. Oh, my goodness, Lakshmi. See? She's not feeling well. Or else she's a critic. What's the matter, Lakshmi? Huh? Let her settle down a little. What's the matter, sweetie? Okay. Your hand is caught in my... Oh. Typical woman. Can never please them. One minute they're all over you, the next minute they want to scratch you to death. Oh, poor baby. Come on. Okay. Am I going to survive? Oh, baby, come on. Ooh. Come on. There you go. Whew. Typical student, also. All for you 1 minute, next minute they want to rip you apart. But anyway, I started in the late 60s. First teacher I went to was Philip Kaplow, and then to Mount Baldy Zen Center. And the Roshi there was Sasaki Roshi. At that time, he was 64 years old. And it was cold, 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 like 7 or 8 below on some days at Mount Baldy. And typical Japanese Zendo, we had windows made of paper. There's not a lot of insulation with paper. There wasn't a lot of heat in the Zendo. We were pretty cold all of the time. But I remember on one morning, Sasaki gave a Teisho, the talk. And in it he said, "You all came for enlightenment here. But you know, enlightenment can become pretty boring." And I was listening. A lot of people were thinking, "Wow, what the fuck am I here for then? If it's boring, why do I want it?" And he went on to say that really you have to take the center of gravity, called Buddha's the center of gravity, and bring it into everyday life, into your personal existence. And at that time, you know, that's the last thing I wanted to hear. I wasn't up there in this 8 degree below zero temperatures to try to become what I already was. And instead, I wanted to become enlightened. I had no idea what enlightenment was, but I thought it was better than where I was. And a few years later, I think it was about 8 or 9 years later, after studying with many Zen teachers, my Izumi Roshi came to my class at UCLA. I was teaching a class in the extension on Zen and psychotherapy. one of the students asked him, "What is Zen?" And he paused for a second, and then he said, "Breathing! Zen is breathing!" And he says, "Zen is living from moment to moment." And I figured, oh my God, another one. I'm looking for enlightenment. I'm looking for the great escape. I'm looking to become superhuman, being able to levitate, at least to turn circles upside down in some kind of super state of super intelligence and wisdom. And at that time, I never thought of divine love. I was thinking in terms of wisdom. And so it went. And in 1995, I finally did have an awakening experiences. And I began disappearing and withdrawing from life. Became sort of dried up, you might say. I just disappeared into the void. And there are many different kinds of voids. The voids you can see. Rajiv talks about the void behind and the void in front. Or the presence in front and the void behind. I don't remember. But there are many kinds of voids you can see. Very many kinds of emptiness. And you can feel them too. There's a difference between feeling an emptiness and seeing an emptiness. But the great void is the one you can never see. That's you. You is the absolute. You, as the subject, can never see the subject. You can only see objects and consciousness as an object. So you can see a void and you can see consciousness, you can see your presence. But what you really are, you have to agree with Christ and say, "I don't know." Don't know mind is very important. It's one with no concepts except I don't know. It's empty and receptive. That's you. Everything comes out of you, that depth of unknowing. The great void, the mystery. And this is where I was, trying to get deeper and deeper into that void and aware of the void in front and my own sense of presence. And yet something moved me in 2003 or 2004 to begin teaching about Robert. And then someone came along a few months ago, changed everything. You know who she is. And I began experiencing emotions once again. The fullness of my own presence. Love. Loss, anger, jealousy, and you think kind of hatred, anger, all these emotions would wash through me. But it wasn't the same as 20 years ago. 20 years ago, I was a person, and these emotions would go through me, and they served no purpose whatsoever except to irritate me. But now when feelings arose, they revitalized me. They added life to the emptiness that I was. They added energy. They added meaning. From the void and from the emptiness, I gradually returned to the world. As Ed Musica. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I still enjoy it. Every day I wake up, I'm happy. Every day my sense of presence seems stronger to me. All those feelings now are mine. I own them. They're me, Ed. Once again, the personal came back. No longer impersonal, but personal. Something had changed. Instead of the individual I was 20 years ago, you might say I was like empty as a drum, but had all of these feelings go through me. I could express it, but I didn't have to. I could let it grow or let it drop away. I could think about it or not. I preferred not to. Thinking itself was just as stupid as feeling all the feelings. And the phrase, shit happens, became a reality for me. This stuff just comes and comes and comes without reason, almost without origin. It comes out of emptiness and hits you in the face. And it's okay. My presence and my emptiness, which I identify with, contains everything. Becomes great fun, not oppressive. It's a return to individuality. There's something that had changed. The change was, I knew I was none of all of this. For years I had known I was none of all of this. This consciousness, these feelings, these thoughts, they were like foreign to me. But now that they were becoming me, but at the same time I was emptiness, it was so much easier to tolerate, so much easier to take. And once you know that emptiness that contains everything and that is you, everything becomes so much easier. The emotions just go through. And they're enjoyed rather than suffered. So, first step is going into the infinite. Recognizing that you don't exist as an entity anywhere. With that comes the freedom that everything created by mind is a myth because it's all based on the concept of I. Our whole existence is based on the concept that there is an I inside of us, somewhere inside of us. And that concept collapses. And we're everything. But then we see even that is unreal. That everything we see, feel, touch, taste is not real. It's emptiness. It has no reality in and of itself. It just comes out of emptiness and returns to emptiness. It has no permanent existence. Therefore, Robert would say, it is not real. It's like a mirage. It comes and goes. It has no ability to sustain itself other than our own consciousness. And we are just a manifestation, a finite manifestation of the universal consciousness. And we too disappear. The I am disappears. The consciousness associated with our body disappears. And yet we witnessed it coming and we will witness it going. We witness it coming every morning and we witness it going every evening. And who is this we? This we is really us. We have the knowledge we exist, and that knowledge is in the I am, in consciousness. But what we are is beyond consciousness. Yet, knowing we are beyond it allows us to fully participate in it and really not give a damn about the consequences, because it's just a play. We can choose to throw ourselves into the movie or into the play and enjoy it, or ignore it, like Robert did. Robert ignored the play. Robert had a hard time staying in the world. He just didn't care anymore. He was done with the world. I sort of enjoy it. So, now that you're all enlightened using the direct method, what next? You see, some of these teachings are so superficial. When awakening comes, it's usually a tremendous experience for you, however you experience it. And when you look back when it happens, you'll see that all of the activities you did with your mind had nothing to do with your awakening. Because the awakening is the awakening of an intelligence in you, where you directly apperceive reality, as opposed to use the mind to understand reality. And what happens is the mind drops away, it takes a secondary or tertiary importance, and now there's a direct seeing. So before, all of your operations were in the mind, of the mind, and for the mind. And suddenly the mind drops away. And you can't imagine that anything that you did within the mind awakened this intelligence which is above and beyond the mind. And yet it seems to go together. Practice in the mind, with the mind, seems to be important, whether it's self-inquiry or mind-directed meditation. And I used the example of a famous baseball player. I don't know who it was. Pete Rose. Let's make up Pete Rose. It wasn't him, but let's say it was Pete Rose. The reporters always would talk to him after game about his wonderful performance, his three hits that day, or a triple play he participated in, and everybody would say how brilliant it was, and he would say, "I was lucky." And he'd say this time after time after time, and that wasn't Pete Rose. Pete Rose never said he was lucky. He said it was him. So Pete Rose is the wrong guy. But let's say this new modest Pete Rose would be asked all the time, how did you do that play? I was lucky. And one reporter one time says, but you practice 8 hours a day, every day. What is this thing about luck? And Pete responded, well, I found out the more I practice, the luckier I get. And the same thing with awakening. The more we practice, the easier it seems to happen. Yes, there are a few where awakening happened without anybody doing anything, like with Robert and Ramana Maharshi. But that's not for most of us. Most of us have to struggle and whine and bitch and moan, then struggle some more and do more meditation and suffer. Especially if you're going into the Sufi path, the path of emotions and bhakti, the suffering seems to be exponential. While those of us who tried the Advaita way is kind of gentle and boring. But most of us, some sort of activity is necessary. Even if it's a pretense, it seems to be necessary to get lucky. Who are you? Who are you? What are you? Look deep inside. What do you see? Do you see anything? Do you see emptiness? Do you see any pumpkin pie left over from Thanksgiving? Do you see a self? You know, it's so ridiculous that people think that just because you can't find an I object, that you don't exist and that an ego does not exist. They say because you can see that there is no I, that your mind and your body don't exist. But they certainly do exist. And they color everything you see and do. You as the absolute subject. The personality that you're born with. The mind you're born with. The body you're born with. Creates the reality you see. And then the education further manipulates it. And then spirituality is to try to take those, what would you call it, the boxes away so you can see freshly. It's not that easy.